Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Well, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show. Today on the telephone, we have Jim Zimmer, who's the owner of Midnight Magdalena Vineyards in Jonesville, North Carolina. Jim, welcome to the radio program.
Thank you, Chuck. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jim, one of the things that we'd like to hear about is where did you come from? What got you interested in making wine and growing grapes and getting into the viticulture industry?
Both my wife and I, we worked in the energy industry. She's an attorney, and she used to work in the corporate offices, and I used to manage power plants. So we came from an industry that had absolutely nothing to do with farming, but it was something that when my wife had taken a vacation in France and visited some French wineries, it was actually a bike tour in the back countries of France, and you visit all of these small boutique wineries. And she just absolutely fell in love with the whole idea of doing this. And then we had talked about it and thought, what a great way to segue into a second career. Instead of working for others all our life, why don't we do something that we would enjoy doing? And the winery side of it just was something that really, really sang to us of something that we wanted to be a part of.
Fantastic. That's the way a lot of people get started, Jim.
Yes, there comes a point where instead of spending all of your time making money for somebody else, it's time to do something that really makes an impression on yourself, and it's not always about making money, it's about doing something that you just really enjoy and want to be a part of.
We call that having a severe passion, and that's the way I am on growing grapes here in the mountains. I just don't understand why people don't do more of it. Well, let's talk about your particular facility there, Jim. How big is your vineyard, and how big is your farm, you know, relative to what you have under vine?
We bought two different plots of land. They're right across the street from each other, and we were fortunate that both properties had been owned by the same person previous to us. So it was nice to be able to have these family-owned properties and keep them in a family. We bought 40 acres in 2010, and that's where we got the business started. We then purchased 16 acres in 2014. On the 40 acres is where we have the first blocks of the vineyard planted. We have about 6 acres of vines, and we have 4 different varietals planted. We will be planting an additional 4 acres on the 16 acres across the street, which is where the tasting house is. So we'll be planting an additional 4 acres in April of next year.
Let's talk about the decision-making process on the actual land itself. Were you looking for just location? Were you looking for a special type of terroir? What led you to get that particular piece of land?
We knew we wanted to be in the Swan Creek AVA. When we first came to North Carolina and started tasting wines, we enjoyed wines from many different wineries. But the Swan Creek AVA was just something that really kind of stuck out for us. So we were targeting to be within the AVA. We found this property kind of by chance. It was not something that we had looked at early on. We were looking for... we knew we wanted to have at least 20 acres, and both my wife and I are from the city, so when we first started looking at property and realized just how big 20 acres was, that kind of was a little intimidating to think that we would own that much property, but now that we've been here for a few years, 56 acres is like, why doesn't everybody have that?
My wife came here after owning 126 acres up in Virginia. And she called it downsizing. We've got 26 acres now, and for me, it's just outrageous. 26 acres, holy cow, that's a lot of work.
It does mean there's a little extra work involved with it, but we were looking for land that we did not have to clear, and both of these properties had always been farmland. Like a lot of farms around here, they had been tobacco for many years, and then about 30 years ago, the previous owner had shifted over to the cereal crop, so they were doing corn and soybeans. And that was something that really worked out well for us, because we have these fields that have about 12 to 18 inches of biomass from this past 30 years of going from the corn and the soybeans, because they just plant on top. It's really a no-till type of farming. So we have a lot of compost that continues to break down on the top of our soil.
Boy, you are lucky in that regard. My goodness, most of this area out here is just red clay.
We have to go down about 12 to 18 inches in some areas in order before we really start getting into the clay material.
Oh, wow. That's got to be fantastic for growing grapes.
Oh, we've got some variety. We've got our Traminette will grow for the past. We planted in 2013, and our Traminette over the past 5 years, each of the shoots are growing about a foot a week. Puts a lot of vigor. Even our Riesling, we have to hedge our Riesling three times this year.
Oh my goodness!
Because of all the vigor that we have on it.
Wow.
Yeah, sometimes it's a little too fertile.
Jeez, boy, that mid-season canopy management can kill you.
It takes a lot of time. Yes.
Jim, talk to us a little bit about the decision-making process that went into the types or varietals that you chose to plant.
Yeah, we actually started talking about what kinds of wines we wanted to make before we even bought the property in 2010. So this was something that we had started planning even before we bought the property. We knew that we did not want to have an extremely large tasting list. We wanted to keep the number of wines down to a very good number that people can come in and enjoy the tastings without having to avoid tastings because there were too many wines to have. So that was our first priority. The second priority, we wanted to have both varietals that had a name recognition, but we also wanted to try to do some unique things that would be very different here for the AVA. So we ended up with four different varietals. The two varietals that we chose that we knew would have a good name recognition were Merlot and Riesling. The other two varietals were hybrid grapes, and it was something that we had tasted these hybrids before, and we knew that they would produce a very good, clean wine, very, very similar to their vinifera parentage. So the two hybrids are Traminette, and the second one is called Coro Noir, and that's spelled CoroteNoir. The Coro Noir, as far as I know, we're the first ones in North Carolina to have planted that grape. I know that there's at least one more that's planted it since been planted. And we've harvested it for the first year this year. We got about 2.5 tons of the grapes, and we're processing it into wine right now. As far as I know, we're the first ones to actually have an estate grown and harvested, planted the whole thing here in North Carolina with that Coro Noir grape.
Where's that come from? Because I'm not familiar with that one either.
It was a hybrid that was developed out of Cornell, and the intent was to develop a grape that would produce a Pinot Noir style of wine, but doesn't have the tendencies to be a very challenging grape to grow the Pinot Noir does here in North Carolina. So it was something that, if we're lucky, this is going to be a wine that will be very unique to the area, because we don't have to do something special to make it like a Pinot Noir. It is something that the grapes will just come about naturally.
To really do a good job of Pinot Noir, you got to have the right terroir, but it's also a climate thing because the clusters are so tight.
Yes.
And so the Coro Noir, you're saying, is not as tight as a Pinot Noir?
No, absolutely. That's one of the beauties of it. Coro Noir is a large, very loose bunch. The berries on it are probably twice the size of a Merlot grape. We get a lot of juice out of them. Because they're hybrid nature, we do tend to get the sugars up about 3 to 4 bricks higher than we can on the Merlot.
Wow.
It's something that should really do a very nice, and the Cordon Noir was actually bred more for colder weather, colder climates like upstate New York, throughout the Midwest, even up into Canada.
Sure.
But so far, the grapevine has done very well here in North Carolina, even though cold is not the problem that we have.
Yeah, we're at 2,100 feet here at our little vineyard. What's your elevation there?
We're about 1,150.
What about the other four varieties you have? You've got these two, you said, are the hybrids. What about the other four?
The four that we're going to plant this year, we've decided to really stretch out and plant some things that are very different and unique. We're going to go with 2 reds and 2 whites. So the 2 red vines, most people are familiar with Tempranillo, which is a Spanish red grape. Does a very nice, bold wine. The other red grape is called Zweigel, which is an Austrian red grape.
How you spell that?
Z-W-E-I-G-E-L-T.
Zweigel, okay.
I don't know of anybody who's got Zweigel planted in this area. I think it's more north of us, up towards New York and those areas.
Yeah, in the state here and up in Virginia, I'm pretty familiar with what's going on there. I know there's a number of people who are using Tempranillo. That's a great grape. But Zweigelt, I don't recall talking to anybody here who has that one in the ground. So that's great.
And that's kind of like when we chose to do the Cordon Noir. We wanted to do some things that would be very different, very unique, try some things that are not so common, and giving our guests something that they probably will not have tried before. But when they find out, hey, Austria has been making some very good wines for a very long time. And so we're pretty hopeful that that's going to turn into something that will be a very big crowd pleaser.
Super. What about your 2 whites?
These go way out on the limb. The first one is a French grape called Madeleine Angevine. The only place that I know of in the country that's growing is up in Washington State. Because when I've looked to find any place where I can buy a wine, it's either one of the vineyards around the Puget Sound area or you have to purchase it from overseas. So it should be a very unique grape for this area. And then the other grape is a pink-skinned Greek grape called Moscofilaro, which we are expecting will make a very nice dry blush wine.
Wow, you've really got some different grapes there.
Like I said, we really wanted to be able to do something that was very different, very unique. We know that there is a little bit of a taking some vines that have not got a history planted in the area, but we were looking for certain characteristics of the grapes and the vines that we thought would do very well in this area. So we wanted vines that would do primarily a later bud break and an early ripening grape. We wanted thicker skin grapes that would naturally have a looser bunch. And that way we thought that we would be able to avoid some of the late frosts, try to work through some of the September rains that we get from the hurricanes. And then the grape characteristics with the looser bunch and the thicker skins would be a little bit more disease resistant and help us with the spray penetration.
Jim, we're going to take a break at this point in time. So everybody just hang on. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Jan Watson's Rare Plant Juices. Jan is a well-known personality in western North Carolina, where he has sought out a plethora of native wild plants only found in the mountains of Madison County. He's developed an exotic breeding program that allows him to create an eclectic variety of plants to suit the most discriminating gardeners. Jan has won all kinds of awards from garden clubs all over our western mountains in North Carolina for his unorthodox breeding techniques. Recently, I caught up with Jan near his home in Spring Creek, west of Hot Springs, to discuss his really different fruits he's created from breeding different plants. He was dressed in his usual bib overalls and straw hat with a corncob pipe dangling from his mouth. I asked him about his newest creation. He told me that he was crossing a walnut tree with a porcelain berry vine to make a wallberry bush. Jan claims that the resulting wallberries will have a beautiful iridescent blue color, a soft, thin outer shell to make it easy to peel, and firm enough to juice. Jan opened his fridge and offered me a drink of his Unyat,
a cross between an onion and a carrot. The juice tasted like spicy hot carrot juice. He suggests using it for a starting drink with any dinner where wild turkey or wild boar was served. His fridge had many interesting bottles with handwritten labels on the contents. I scanned through them and asked him what each meant. A bottle of Krig is a juice made from his cross of a cranberry and a fig. The flavor was more pleasing than the mud color of the juice, and I didn't like the cranberry skins he left in the juice. Equally disgusting was the juice from his cherry tree cross with mushroom he calls a charum. His cross between a Coosa dogwood and a potato yielded a Coosato, the juice of which is a deep red color. The flavor is really disgusting, though. Jan said it is an acquired taste. He said his neighbor, Susie Saxton, had tried it last week and had to immediately run outside to keep from making a mess in his kitchen. He then pulled out some of his buffachoke, a cross of a buffalo berry and an artichoke, and splashed a bit in a mason jar for me to taste. The deep green-purple color put me off a bit, but the flavor was quite pleasant, although I didn't like the consistency. It was really thick, like drinking mud. Jan's last offering for my visit was his dandimato, a cross between dandelions and tomatoes. This one was my favorite. It had a very agreeable flavor of tomato with the astringent aftertaste of dandelion roots. Although I thought it a bit strange that it glowed in the dark, a point that Jan had to make by turning off the lights for a minute while I was drinking his concoction. Jan claims he uses a jar of it as a flashlight when checking on his dogs after dark. Jan has made a limited production of each of his rare plant juice drinks for sale in small pint-sized mason jars with his handwritten personalized labels. You can buy Jan Watson's rare plant juices at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for $1.298 a jar. Jan Watson's rare plant juices. More great products made in the good old U.S. of A. here in the mountains of Madison County, North Carolina. And now back to our regular program.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We've been on the phone today with Jim Zimmer, who's the owner of Midnight Magdalena Vineyards out in Jonesville, North Carolina. For those of you who are a little bit geographically challenged, that's in the Swan Creek AVA, and that's on the south end of Yadkin Valley, if I recall. Is it, Jim?
Yes, it is.
Let's go back just a little bit. You had talked earlier about having about 2.5 tons of this new grape, the Carte Noire, that you had picked there. Let's talk about the winemaking process that you went through to do that. Are you using, a stainless steel to do your fermentation?
When we bring in the red wines, we start everything off with the fermentation in the stainless steel tanks, and then we shift everything over to oak barrels, and we do the reds for about 9 months in oak barrels. Typically right now what we have used are used French oak barrels. And the primary reason for that is we want the wine to be more expressive about what the grape was. We're not looking to have the flavors and the aromas be overpowered by the oak barrel. So by having the oak, the used French oak, we get a very, we get all of the aging maturation that we want from the barrel without putting a lot of flavor or tannins in from the barrel. Keeps the wine very much a fruit-forward wine, and we think it provides a little bit softer, easier drinking for our guests that really seems to do well for them.
Well, I'm one who does not enjoy drinking a glass of wine when you feel like you're chewing on an oak stave, so I think you're certainly in the right direction on that. Okay, what about the yeast you use? Are you using dry yeast or liquid yeast to process?
We do use dry yeast. It's one of the things that we try to do a little bit different. So as an example, if you're trying to make a wine that is going to be like Pinot Noir, we want to use a yeast that has been used to make Pinot Noir. When we're trying to make a Riesling, we want to use a yeast that is applicable for using or for making a Riesling. My wife tends to be more involved with the winemaking than I am. That's the part that she enjoys. I prefer the vineyard part of it. So she's the one who actually works with our winemaker to make decisions about the yeast and how the final processing is on the wines.
Okay, so your wife gets involved in the winemaking, and who is the winemaker there?
We actually do a custom crush with Yadkin Valley Wine Company. So they're about 10 minutes away from us, and so we found that it was just so much simpler as a new business getting started to be able to utilize the experience that Yadkin Valley Wine Company has. They've been making wine here in this area for, you know, over a decade. And just having the ability to work with people who have a lot of experience making wine with North Carolina grapes just made a lot of sense to us.
Well, I think Custom Crush is exactly the way to go when you're starting out like that. I think that's a good decision.
Yeah, and Stephen Rigby is the winemaker there now, and he's been the winemaker there since 2015, which is when we first brought our grapes into the facility. So far, he has been the only winemaker that we've used in making our wines, and Stephen has been very, very good to work with.
Let's tell folks a little bit about how we can find you, how we can reach you, how we can come visit, where can we buy your wines?
Yeah, so far we have made a decision that we're only selling the wines out of the tasting house. We're not doing any distribution. We produced about 700 cases in our first year, and this year we're going to be somewhere around 1,300 cases. So we really don't have enough that we're looking to do much distribution in the near future. So basically here at the tasting house is where we do everything. We're open Wednesdays through Sundays. Wednesday through Saturday, it's from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. And on Sundays, from noon till 5 p.m. We are located in Jonesville. Most people are not familiar where Jonesville is, but they're very familiar where Elkin is. And so Elkin is north of the Yadkin River, and Jonesville is just on the south side of the Yadkin River. Two cities that are separated by the river. The easiest way to get to us, we're right off of I-77 at exit 79, so we're about 2 miles off of the exit. We're between Business 21 and Swan Creek Road. So if anybody is familiar with the other vineyards here in the Swan Creek AVA, we're only a couple miles away from all of the other vineyards here in the AVA. We do have a Facebook presence. We do have an Instagram presence, and that's where we try to keep people up to date on the different events that we do here at the Tasting House. We do have a website, www.midnightmagdalena.com. We also keep a good calendar of events on the website, and we give a little history about things that we talked about today, how we got into the property, the different types of grapes that we have planted, and what we're looking to plant in the future. So we do try to keep a very good social media and internet presence up on where we are, what we're doing, and how to find us. You can also call us. The phone number here is 336-835-6681.
Email address?
Email address is jim@midnightmagdalena.com.
Okay, so there you go, folks. You've got all the good information you need to try to locate. This place is going to be producing some interesting new wines in the near future and have some probably good wines in stock right now, if I'm not mistaken.
We like to think so, and so far our customers have agreed.
Well, you can always tell from the tasting room. You got everybody sitting around with smiles on their face and ordering it by the bottle and ordering it by the case. You've got a good thing going.
Yes.
Okay, Jim. Well, one last thing from you before we get finished up here today. Tell us a little bit about your property there. If somebody were to come up there and follow your directions to get there, what would we actually see when we get there?
It's one of the things that we were really striving for as far as the feel of our business. We don't want it to feel like a business. When people come out and visit us, we are definitely in the country. We've got a lot, as you're driving down Howell School Road, there are a couple of pastures where you'll see cattle. So we are definitely in a farming community. The vines are on one side of the road, and next April we'll have vines on the property in front of the tasting house. The tasting house is actually a house. It is a home model that we had built for the purpose of the tasting house. We have a wraparound porch. We have a large concrete patio out front for our guests to be able to sit down and enjoy the views. We face directly north, so we have great views of the Blue Ridge Mountains. with the exception of today, because it is so cloudy, you really can't see much except the trees nearby. Behind us, we have a ridge that an offshoot of the Brushy Mountain Range, and that whole ridge has been in beautiful colors all week long. We got a lot of very pretty reds, a lot of yellows. It has really been a very pretty sight this past week and a half or so. We're starting to lose some of the leaves, but when people come out, you're going to see a place that many people say it does look like you're coming into somebody's home. And then when they do come in, we try to make that homey feeling available to them. As soon as you walk in the door, somebody is going to say hi to you. If the tasting bar is filled, somebody will come up and introduce themselves to you, say hi, find out what you want to do, if you want to do tastings, if you just want a glass. So we try to make a very personal connection with people. We have had live music here. Next year, we're going to be looking at live music every Saturday from mid-April to mid-November. We have all of the artists come out. They do only their own original music. We don't play cover songs because we like to have that nice, authentic approach from our artists, the same way that we like to take with our wines and our business. We try to be very authentic.
That sounds like a very welcoming environment you've created there, Jim.
Thank you. It's been a lot of experiences when we've gone out to places. We've tried to identify the highlights of our experiences when we visit other places. And we like to try to incorporate all of the good things that we have felt as a customer into our approach with our customers so that they feel like they have had a very good, positive experience. And when they leave, they have had a very enjoyable time.
Well, one of the key things that's come out of a lot of research in North Carolina, as well as some other states, of course, you're probably very aware of that, is that people aren't necessarily looking just to have a sip of wine. What they're looking for is a true experience. And what it sounds like you've put together there is an environment where you have an excellent experience for your customers.
Yes, and on almost any day that you come up here, you can expect to have either my wife or myself here in the tasting house doing tastings. We have one other person who works with us, and it's my wife's sister. If it's not my wife or I, it's her, and she's also spent a lot of time with us in the vineyard working on things. So we very much are a family operation, and we try to make that come through on the tasting.
Well, I noticed on the website, I was just flicking through that just while we were talking, you've also got a couple interesting dogs there.
Yes, our quality control dog.
Folks, we've been on the telephone today with Jim Zimmer, who's the owner of Midnight Magdalena Vineyards in Jonesville, North Carolina. Jim, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us today.
Thank you, Chuck. I enjoyed it. I certainly look forward to hearing from you again and look forward to coming up and seeing your vineyard sometime.
Well, that'd be fun for us to have you come visit, too. Okay, folks, we're going to call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!